boy. I'm way too young to be this tired. I'm way too old to work this hard. The money comes, but not for long. And when I'm dead, I'll say I'm done.
This is Maricela Barrera. You're listening to Tejana Rascuacha. Coming at you straight from San Antonio, Texas. What is Tejana Rascuacha? Tejana, Chicana, living in Texas, loving in Texas. Rascuacha, a Chicana doing what she can with what she got. This is what I got. This is the second episode coming at you from Tejana Rascuacha, straight from San Antonio, Texas. Yeah! Well, we are recording today at Jumpstart Performance Company. It is October 2nd. Actually, it's the 3rd of October. I know, because 2 days ago I paid my rent. I live on top of my landlord. Wah, 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 wah. I can't forget to pay my beanchip rent. Okay, we have a second installment today. We have a very special guest who's going to be reading a testimonio, creative nonfiction piece, Florinda. And I'll let her give you some more background about her work. But she's going to be reading a piece about being a bilingual elementary school teacher, which I heard her read at the Barrio Barista on the west side of San Antonio a few weeks ago, and it just blew my mind. And we talked about having her on the show early on. So here she is, Florinda.
Hi, my name is Florinda Flores Brown, and I'm the Writers and Communities Program Director at Gemini Inc., and I am also a writer from Laredo, Texas, who writes about the border, and I do that through fiction, playwriting, as well as life stories, one of which I will be sharing with you today. Yo dedico este cuento a los 107 niños que fueron mis alumnos cuando fui maestra. For 5 years, my official title was bilingual elementary school teacher, and my unofficial title was your first teacher in the United States. Whether you were 5 years old or 8 years old, your journey to my classroom started in Mexico, Cuba, El Salvador, Colombia, Guatemala, Ecuador, Puerto Rico. And the labels recent immigrant or recent immigrant dash asylee in your permanent record card only hinted at how you got here. On the first day of school in your new country, you stepped into my classroom as if doing so made you brand new. In your squeaky new shoes and carefully ironed clothes, you clutched your backpack and studied every bulletin board, every learning center, every detail, until your mother said, "Saluda la maestra." You extended your hand and said your name was Mariana, Emilio, Itzamara, Luis, Alejandra. I shook your hand and said, "Qué gusto conocerte." As the school year went on, I taught you how to decode, calculate perimeter, apply the scientific method, speak English, and fill out a Scantron. As for your parents, I explained to them why the tests and tests and more tests were necessary and how here everything is measured and documented. From your reading accuracy to the number of interventions you need to how long it takes you to subtract. But here's what was not measured. All the times you said you liked it here, but you just wanted to go home. When could you go home? How long you stared out the classroom window as if the mountains, beaches, jungles of your homeland might appear on the horizon at any moment. Or how the most important intervention wasn't some computer program, but me just listening to your stories. Like the one about how back in Mexico, your father disappeared one day, never to be seen again. Or the one about the pile of bodies they found right outside your pueblito. Or all the anecdotes about the mordidas, ransoms, and the gang on the corner of your old neighborhood looking for little boys just like you to join them. No teacher training showed me what to do with your stories or the truth that for you, leaving your country was like having a limb amputated. Because what brought you here were not just dreams of opportunity, but the realization that your country, like a gangrenous limb, had become toxic and dangerous to your existence. So I honored your home as best I could. Like when we studied the weather, we charted the temperature and atmospheric conditions of your hometown of San Juan, Havana, El DF, Monterrey, Cuenca, Veracruz, Chimaltenango. And the funny thing was, in most places, the temperature was the same as here, hot. And when you left that day, I saw you pause in the sunlight with your eyes closed, and for a second, this place was home. I love that. Like, I loved watching you eat your first peanut butter and jelly sandwich, play your first game of football instead of football, visit your first museum. Do you remember how our field trip to that museum turned into such a fiasco? All 24 of us, including two of your mothers and our tour guide, crowded into an elevator made of glass and metal. We pressed the first floor button, but instead of stopping there, the glass box shot up to the top floor and back down again. You squealed with delight at our little joyride, but when the machine dropped and shot up faster and faster, your laughter turned to screams, and we clutched the metal handrail. A call to the main office stopped the elevator, and as we waited for help, I started up sing-alongs to distract you from the cramped space and the heat of the box, which had no AC or air vents. Un elefante se balanceaba sobre la tela de una araña. An hour later, steam climbed the glass walls, my songs fell flat, and your mothers flashed me a look that said, if we weren't rescued soon, this could end badly. Our tour guide grew more agitated with every call to the main office. We need to get out. We have 20 children in here. It's crowded and hot, and we have no water. Just then, the fire department arrived, and as they worked on the elevator and we approached our second hour in there, your mothers and I fanned each of you until our arms gave out. Your anxious eyes watched my face, waiting for it to reveal the severity of the situation. But what you didn't see was how I dug my nails into my palms to keep my own ballooning anxiety from exploding. I had to stay calm for you because that's what good teachers do. And when you grabbed me suddenly to say, Maestra, me voy a desmayar, the elevator door flew open and everyone cheered. Soon after that, I announced I wouldn't be returning to teach the following year, and you cried. I didn't leave because of you. Being your first teacher in the United States was the best part of my job. I left because the numbers, measurements, and testing became too much. It's now been 3 years since we last saw each other, and in that time, things have changed in terrible ways. Trompas, as you called him, became president, even though I assured you it couldn't happen. Now the headlines scream of raids, separations, lockups, and deaths on the border. They keep me up at night thinking of how you came here seeking safety only to find a different kind of danger. I had a nightmare about that day in the glass elevator. But in this version of the story, I'm outside the box and you're inside. And instead of 20 of you, there are hundreds and no mothers. The glass is clouded with the heat of your little bodies, the breath of your panic cries. I tear at the door and slam my fists into the glass because if I don't get you out, you will die. But I am no match for the enormous machine that has entrapped you. I press my face to the glass, hoping you can see me, see the face of someone who loves you. I tell myself to stay calm. Good teachers stay calm. But the truth is, I am not calm, because this is ending badly.
Thank you, Florinda. It holds a lot of meaning to you.
Mm-hmm. It does.
You take yourself back to that moment of being in that situation with your kids.
Right.
Do you think for a writer, it's important, you know, to do that, to expose ourselves in that way? Why is it important to you?
Well, because I think when you work with populations like that, obviously that's an important story that I think needs to be told, especially because a lot of the stories we're hearing about the children on the border, I think hearing it from a teacher's point of view who deals with them day in and day out and really is on the front lines with them, I think that's a perspective that maybe we don't quite hear as much. So for me, delving back into that, I felt was important to provide a different perspective. Mm-hmm.
And so was that here in San Antonio, or was that where? So
I taught in Laredo, and then I taught in Pasadena, south of Houston, and then I taught here in San Antonio as well.
Mm. And this particular event took place where?
In San Antonio.
In San Antonio.
Yeah.
So having been there, you know, in the classroom, and having, like, an idea that San Antonio is an epicenter for the gateway of, mm-hmm. of immigrants, refugees. Mm-hmm. Would you agree that, like, San Antonio is the new Ellis Island?
Maybe. So one thing that I do want to clarify is that, that population I worked with in Laredo, I had them in Houston, and then I had them here. Mm-hmm. So I've had recent immigrants in all three of those cities. So really, Texas is kind of Ellis Island, I think, mm-hmm. in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss Laredo? Laredo!
Yeah, I do miss Laredo, but I can't live there. So I live here, and then I go visit, mm-hmm. and I go eat all the food, and I go take lots of notes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you know, right now I'm also working on a collection of short stories about Laredo. And I like to describe it as being unapologetically barrio. Mm-hmm. And so definitely when I'm researching that, I like to go back to Laredo and just drive around in the neighborhoods with my windows rolled down, smell all the carne asadas, mm-hmm. hear all the cumbias mm-hmm. playing mm-hmm. with really loud bass, mm-hmm. You know, and take notes and take pictures and just remember what it's like to be there.
Okay, so when I go to Laredo, where should I go eat?
Danny's.
Danny's? What's yes. Danny? What's special?
Danny's is a family-owned chain in Laredo, mm-hmm. and they have the best mollejas, mm-hmm. which here in San Antonio, people are like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, what the heck is that?
It's glands.
Okay!
Sweetbreads.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And so, they fry them up, and mm-hmm. they put them in a torta de maíz with guacamole, and it's really good.
OMG! Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd go there, and then the second place would be Mr. Corn, to go get some corn. Mm-hmm. And get some Mexican sushi while you're there, too.
And what's that?
It's sushi, but it's, like, infused with Mexican flavors. Mm. So they have, like, you know, serrano and poblano uh-huh. and chipotle and all that stuff.
At Mr. Corn?
No, that's a different restaurant.
Oh, that's a different. It's yeah. called Mexican sushi?
No, it's called, I don't remember the name of the restaurant.
But that's a thing, yeah. Like this.
Well, there's a place here that I heard.
Really?
Yeah, Yellowfish, supposedly. Yeah. Supposedly there's a few places here that you can get the Mexican sushi, but it's because it came up from Monterrey.
Okay.
That's why in Laredo they have a lot of that because of Monterrey.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I grew up in the Rio Grande Valley, mm-hmm. Alamo, and then moved on up to San Juan. And we always sort of looked, you know, to Laredo as, pobrecitos, they want to be part of the valley. But what's the perception in Laredo?
Well, I don't know about the perception in Laredo, but I know we think we're hot stuff.
Yes, you are.
And I think we think we're better than the valley.
Okay.
Probably. But
excuse me, ladies and gentlemen.
But everybody knows that the only place more rancho than Laredo is Zapata.
Yes. Okay. I have this memory of being a kid and going to this little Las Guache hotel room in Zapata. Well, mm-hmm. the fishermen in my family went to fish.
Yeah. At Falcon Lake.
Okay, Falcon Lake. Yeah. Because I have family that come up from Guardado de Abajo. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's the big sort of story in my family, is that area.
Well, my grandmother had my mom's family had a trailer in Zapatan. That was kind of like their vacation home. Oh, it was a barrio vacation home, and it was just this like old, ugly trailer. Mm-hmm. And they would just go there and drink beer and get drunk and fish.
Mm-hmm. So there's this like mystical element to that region. You could see it like in the scorpions that come, you know, around, mm-hmm. you know, that it's really arid. There's a lot of cactus.
The heat is a specific heat in Laredo that I haven't seen anywhere else.
Would you describe it for someone that's listening from Alaska?
Well, it's like always 110. It's always mm-hmm. 5 to 10 degrees hotter than San Antonio, mm-hmm. number one. And number two, the other thing I always say about Laredo's heat is that it hits you from above and from below, so it mm-hmm. feels like it's bouncing up off mm-hmm. the ground. So the ground feels very, very hot.
Mm-hmm.
And when the wind blows in the summer, it feels like a nuclear blast.
Wow.
It's really, really, really hot.
Why do you think it was populated so?
I don't know.
Really? God, we have
because of the river, probably.
Like, a lot, like, we have some thick skin, you know, being from the border, being bicultural, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, what, you know, how is that? That's obviously is impacting your writing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And how about your lifestyle? You know, I always think that, like, in my family, some of the traditions have gone away, have mm-hmm. Disappeared almost. You know, mm-hmm. my grandmother grew up in a rancho, you know, like with my mom until she was like a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
But just in one generation, like a lot of rancho within me has mm-hmm. disappeared. And I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I think the same thing's happening in my family as well. You know, I know me leaving Laredo is definitely impacting my children. They're growing up with a very different culture than what I grew up with. While I think my culture in Laredo was a gift and it has definitely fueled a lot of my creativity and my voice, I do also know that there are drawbacks to growing up in Laredo, and one of those being maybe not as open to other cultures or other types of people, other experiences.
Mm.
And so my husband, who's also from Laredo, who was a gringo growing mm-hmm. up in Laredo, which was a whole nother mm-hmm. rollo,
mm-hmm.
I know for us it was important to expose our kids to a lot of different things. You know, there's a lot more art. There's a bigger art community here in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. There's theater. My son's interested in theater. There are more opportunities for that here. So yes, like we're giving them that, but I do realize that it's coming at the cost of them not growing up in the barrio the way that I did, them not going to the carne asada every weekend the way we did, not growing up with such violent piñata,
mm-hmm.
piñatas at their birthday parties.
Oh,
you know,
you can bring that back a little bit, the piñata abuse, I guess. I don't know.
Well, the parties just in Laredo in the barrio, there was like a tail on a donkey with mm-hmm. like a rusty nail, you know, and they would blindfold you and like, you know, somebody got hurt, who cares, give them a tetanus shot.
Yeah. Party time.
Yeah. So they're growing up with something, I think, a lot more, what's the word? It's a lot tamer
mm-hmm.
than what I grew up with.
Yeah.
But I do try to infuse the culture with them. You know, we listen to a lot of music at home
mm-hmm.
that's in Spanish, cumbias, all the stuff I grew up with. The other thing is my youngest is in the dual language program.
Mm-hmm.
I speak Spanish at home. So, you know, and then they also do go spend a lot of time with their grandparents in Laredo. So we are trying to find a way to not completely lose touch with that.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I'm, you know, sort of grappling with all that myself.
Well, your daughter
with
too,
my
right?
my daughter, yes. And we do what we can, you know, we do what we can, definitely. And doing this is part of it.
Right.
Doing this and sharing these stories
mm-hmm.
Is very important. Well, thank you, Florinda.
Thank you for having me.
And hopefully we could do this again.
Sure, sounds good.
Tejana Rascuacha is funded in part through a grant by the National Association of Latino Arts and Culture. You can find them at NALAC, NALAC.org. Shout out to Allison Alonso, whose work, Get Me High, from her Romantic EP, is our featured opening song for the first season of Tejana Rascuacha. Shout out to the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center and Radio Esperanza for supporting this podcast and Low Power Radio Show. This is Maricela Barrera. You can find me at maricelabarrera.com, and I spell my name with an S. That's MariselaBarrera.com.
I'm way too young to be this tired. I'm way too old to work this hard. The money comes, but not for long. And when I'm dead, I'll say I'm done. You say you wanna get me high. It's gonna take a lot more than a positive attitude. High enough to reach the sky. And when I come back down, I'll crawl right in to you. Crawl right in to you. Quiet, but in my head the screams got louder, louder. Ooh. Ooh. You say you wanna get me high. It's gonna take a lot more than a positive attitude. Enough to reach the sky. And when I come back down, I'll crawl right in. You say you wanna get me high. It's gonna take a lot more than a positive attitude. High enough to reach the sky. And when I come back down, I'll crawl right into you. Crawl right into you. Crawl right into you.